Pritzker, A Tragedy Occurred Here, by Jerry Nowicki of Capital Illinois News. Governor J.B. Pritzker said he has not seen the video of an Illinois State Police trooper shooting an unarmed woman to death in January, though he reiterated trust in the department's leadership on Wednesday. So I have to admit that the details of the decision about that, I do not know. So it's very hard for me to have a reaction, Pritzker said at an unrelated event in Chicago, though he later referred to the woman who was shot as a victim. He was specifically asked about the St. Clair County State's Attorney's decision not to file charges against Trooper Gary Blake Novak for shooting and killing Rachel Terrence, a mother of three, during a traffic stop January 4th in East St. Louis. Capital News Illinois first reported the decision not to charge Novak on Monday. Terrence, 40, was unarmed but driving a Chevy Equinox that her mother had reported stolen earlier in the day when police pulled her over, with a passenger beside her and her four-year-old son strapped in a car seat behind her. She pulled into the drive-thru of a liquor store. State police had called for a felony traffic stop at 8:08 p.m., according to St. Clair County State's Attorney James Gomrich's letter declining to file charges against Novak. Within seconds, Terrence's car was surrounded by four Illinois State Police vehicles at the Rainbow Liquor Mart drive-thru on State Street in East St. Louis. With Novak's squad blocking the exit, Terrence put the car in reverse and hit a squad car parked behind her, the video showed. Troopers emerged from their cars and began shouting orders. While officers are giving commands to the occupants of the vehicle, the Equinox moves forward in the direction of Trooper Novak before coming to a stop, Gomrich's letter stated. Terrence disregarded commands to put the car in park, as instructed by one trooper, according to the letter, and the engine can be heard revving up before the vehicle moves forward again. Novak emerged from the car with his gun drawn and moved toward the front quarter panel of Terrence's car, then stepped to the side and back as he fired three shots, striking her twice, according to dash, body cam, and surveillance videos released by state police who captured the shooting. He does not appear to be in the path of the vehicle. The passenger and Terrence's son were not injured. I will say that a tragedy occurred here, Pritzker said Wednesday. No police officer, state police, or any other police officer wants to have to pull a weapon out and be engaged in shooting in any way. But the governor also described Terrence as a victim and promised to, at some point, be ready to react to the shooting. He said he had not reviewed the video. And, of course, the victim of that shooting is somebody that we should be thinking of, particularly this victim, he said. The Illinois State Police's Division of Internal Investigation completed its investigation of the shooting in mid-February and turned it over to State's Attorney General Gomrich's office to determine whether Novak's use of force was lawful. That division reviews all officer-involved shootings by state police personnel, according to policy. Illinois State Police Director Brendan Kelly previously served as St. Clair County State's Attorney prior to being appointed to lead the department by Pritzker. According to Gomrich's letter, evaluation of the shooting included a detailed review of more than 40 hours of audio and visitor and video encompassing radio traffic, dash cam, body cam, surveillance, and witness interviews. I, again, have not seen all the information, Pritzker said, but I will say that we have leadership at the Illinois State Police, in particular, that is of very high character, and I expect that they have done a thorough job reviewing this and that the matter has been, you know, been made transparent within the department and within the adjudicators of it. Moving on to page 6, this is an opinion article by Jim Day. National state Dems increasingly critical of Israel. If a recent vote in the U.S. House of Representatives means anything, national and state Democrats are turning away from their traditional support of Israel. More than 100 U.S. House Democrats recently voted to terminate aid to Israel, an action that was described as seismic by Politico. Among those voting in favor of terminating was former Democratic U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, once a strong Israel supporter. The measure went down to defeat 314 to 104, but that's because House Republicans voted with pro-Israel Democrats to defeat it. Of Illinois' 17 U.S. House members, 14 Democrats and 3 Republicans, 9 voted against termination of aid, while 8 voted for it. All 3 Republicans voted no, Representatives Darren LaHood, Mary Miller, and Mike Bost. But Illinois Democrats split, 8 voting to terminate aid and 6 voting to continue it. U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski from Springfield, a Democrat, who's been targeted by anti-Israel protesters, voted against terminating aid. The Democratic defections from Israel sent shockwaves through the political system, particularly among Democrats concerned with how the issue will affect the 2026 and 2028 elections. One prominent Jewish Democrat contemplating a presidential run, former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, sought to burnish his credentials with the anti-Israel left by traveling to Israel, where he delivered what the New York Times called a stern, tough love message for America's most embattled, isolated ally. Emanuel called for Israel to make significant policy changes and take a new direction. The U.S. and Israel alliance is at a crossroads. It cannot stand or survive as it has been, he said. Illinois Democrats favoring termination of aid were U.S. Representatives Mike Quigley, Delia Ramirez, Danny Davis, Jan Schakowsky, Jonathan Jackson, Robin Kelly, Lauren Underwood, and Jesus Garcia. Opposing were Budzinski and Representatives Sean Kasten, Brad Schneider, Bill Foster, Eric Sorensen, and Raja Krishnamoorthy. Analysts attributed part of the rising anti-Israel tide to personal animosity to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He's Israel's Trump, said Chicago Democrat Paul Vallis, who's active in party politics. They also cited as reasons current U.S.-Israel military activities in Iran that have driven up gasoline prices and Israel's pursuit of Hamas into Gaza after the October 7, 2023 surprise attack by Hamas on Israel. Critics have charged that Israel responded too harshly to the assault that left more than 1,000 Israelis dead, asserting the Israeli government has engaged in genocide in Gaza. Some Democrats, motivated by sympathy for Palestinians, are openly hostile to Israel. Others who are normally supportive of Israelis justified their new position on Israel as opposition to Netanyahu. We've all grown frustrated with Prime Minister Netanyahu's actions, said Representative Stephen Lynch, Democrat of Massachusetts. But that argument was characterized as a convenient fig leaf embraced by prominent Democrats trying to appease the progressive left. James Zogby, president of the Arab American Institute, wrote that Israelis ridding themselves of Netanyahu isn't enough because those who are running against him do not oppose his overall approach to Palestinians. Zogby also charged that Emanuel sidesteps the real issues by embracing a dangerous fantasy of a broad regional peace between Israel and the 21 Arab states as the way forward. The question, of course, is to what degree Democrats are abandoning Israel. University of Illinois Springfield political science professor Kent Redfield said the disaffection is tied up in current events, but not permanent. There's still strong Democratic support for Israel, but with a caveat, Redfield said. Redfield said a string of electoral house wins by Democratic socialists has scared traditional Democrats who are now trying to co-opt leftist critics for electoral purposes. But it remains to be seen if socialist Democrats like New York Mayor Zohran Mamdani and Congressional Progressive Caucus members will accept a half loaf when they have more ambitious goals. There is no doubt the destruction of Israel is the ultimate goal, Vallis said. Jim Day is a staff writer for the News Gazette. His email is jdey@newsgazette.com. And now we move on to the Bailey Buzz. Vermilion County reporter Jennifer Bailey is at your service. Celebrating 190 years of Indianola, 1836 to 2026, is Indianola having an anniversary celebration? The Village of Indianola's 190th anniversary celebration is occurring in conjunction with its annual Good Old Days Festival set for Saturday. The village, located about 20 miles southwest of Danville and with a population of about 200, is recognized as the third oldest in Vermilion County. This year's celebration marks the contributions of generations of residents to its growth and continued community spirit, according to Village President Holly Austin, who also is an event committee member. She said Indianola will officially celebrate its 190th anniversary on September 6th. Rather than hold two separate events, we decided to combine the anniversary celebration with this year's Good Old Days Festival, she said. We will have historical photographs and other items on display to recognize Indianola's history. The celebration will include a proclamation presented by Vermilion County Board Chairman Steve Miller. The village also has received commemorative recognition from the Illinois Senate, State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican Muhammad, and the White House in honor of Indianola's 190th anniversary. The certifications will be on display. There will be a full day of activities on Saturday, including a parade, local vendors, live entertainment by Elmer Snoke and Those Three Guys, historical actors, a kiddie tractor pull, a bounce house and water slide, an Indianola jail, a donkey dump, Highland cows, a petting zoo, a cakewalk, a cruise in, a silent auction, and a community aerial photograph throughout the village. The 1:30 p.m. parade serves as the traditional kickoff to the festival and is one of the highlights of the day, according to Holly Austin. Historical actors from the Vermilion County Bicentennial Celebration Committee will bring local history to life throughout the day. The Good Old Days was a community fixture in Indianola for many years before it was eventually retired, Austin said. We brought the festival back in 2022. I believe it was started in the 1990s, but can't confirm the exact date or year. The festival gives an opportunity to gather, reconnect, and celebrate the community, she said. What I appreciate most about living in Indianola is its small-town appeal, she added. Neighbors care for each other and look out for one another. Despite our size, there is a strong sense of community. The village invites residents, friends, former residents, and visitors to join the And continuing on with the Bailey Buzz, why is the Dollar General at Gilbert and Fairchild Streets in Danville closed? According to signs at the store at 300 West Fairchild Street, the closure is temporary while the store is remodeled into a DG Market. Public relations officials with Dollar General Corp. said plans are to reopen within the next week. The new DG Market store will offer expanded produce, refrigerated and frozen food offerings, dairy products, and more, in addition to an assortment of fresh meats alongside the general merchandise, officials said. At this time, we do not plan to remodel additional Danville stores into our DG Market format, but continue to evaluate opportunities. A couple years ago, Dollar General also announced a new DG Market on Georgetown Road. Dollar General was founded in 1939 and has more than 21,000 Dollar General, DG Market, DGX, and Pop Shelf stores across the U.S., including others in Vermilion County. Continuing with the Bailey Buzz, what's the story behind the first Musicians Community Yard Sale and Jam? The free event that's open to the public will take place from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at Snappers at Turtle Run, 332 Liberty Lane in Danville. Musician Ben Jenkins, who's been playing for 50 years in the Champaign and Danville areas and elsewhere, said he has a lot of musical friends from East Central Illinois and often gets asked if he or the others are looking to sell, trade, or buy items ranging from guitars, drums, and amplifiers to speakers and CDs and posters. I've been wanting to put this together for a couple years, Jenkins said. He said he's seen an event like this elsewhere, and I thought this could be pretty cool. Let's give it a try. there will be at least 15 vendors from Champaign and Vermilion counties and Indiana selling items such as at least a half dozen drum sets, amps, guitars, sound systems, lighting, speaker stands, hats, music t-shirts, sheet music, keyboards, and other musical instruments in addition to artwork and framed photographs and magazines. It's mainly used and vintage and maybe some new things, Jenkins said. One vendor will have custom guitar panels and strings, he said, adding he also had a few spaces left for vendors. There will also be two live jam sessions from 1 to 1:45 and 2:30 to 3:15 p.m. on Saturday. One last article from Vermilion County. Now hear this, the latest from our Danville-based radio group news director, Steve Brandy. Grant money hits the spot for Danville Library. Danville Public Library Director Christopher Leggins and his staff received good news. The Illinois Secretary of State's office was sending $49,000 to the library, about $6,000 more than last year's amount. Leggins said it will help get planned projects moving a little quicker. It's going to help us provide quality services for our library moving forward, he said. We've got some important capital improvement projects that we're working on, and we're looking to update our collection as well. From 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Friday, the library's new bookmobile will make its debut at Winter Park. Attack at Rossville home nets 15 years in prison. A former Hoopston man has been sentenced to 15 years in prison in an October 2023 attack on a woman in her home in Rossville. Dwight L. Rowe, 34, pleaded guilty earlier this month before Vermilion County Judge Mark S. Goodwin to one count of home invasion, a Class X felony. In addition to prison, he was ordered to serve 18 months of mandatory supervised release. Prosecutors presented evidence that on October 11, 2023, Rowe entered the home of a woman in Rossville who had previously obtained an order of protection against him that prohibited him from having contact with her. The victim told police she was working from home when Rowe entered her bedroom and attempted to initiate a sexual encounter. When she rejected him and tried to get away, Rowe became violent, grabbing her and punching her in the face, then strangling her until she lost consciousness. This article is by Jennifer Bailey. Moving on to page A8, our communities, City of Urbana, live streams of city meetings on hold due to audio issues by Jana Wiersma. Dateline Urbana. The City of Urbana has announced that meetings of the City Council, as well as city boards and commissions, will not be live streamed on UPTV6 or YouTube until further notice due to technical challenges. The audio system in the chambers is seriously degraded, the clerk's office said in an online notice. Therefore, the public's ability to hear the meeting will be vastly compromised during the live stream. Footage will be available 3 to 5 business days after the actual meeting date. Wednesday's announcement came just 2 days after it was announced that Monday's Committee of the Whole session would be postponed 1 week due to technical difficulties. Building supply opening at new location on Monday by Jennifer Bailey. Dateline Danville. When Kirchner Building Center opens its new location at the northwest corner of Gilbert and Fairchild Streets at 7 a.m. Monday, it will have extended hours, almost double the number of employees, and about that much more customer space in its storefront and lumberyard. The business is moving from 508 West Williams Street, where it's been located for about 30 years after expanding with the 1996 purchase of the Danville Cash and Carry Lumber Company, according to a history provided by the business. A grand opening celebration at its new site is planned for August 21st. Store manager Joe Wallace said he's not sure yet what the grand opening will include. A 2022 redevelopment agreement for Kirchner's move to the former Goodwill site had the city spending up to $750,000 to acquire and demolish 10 properties surrounding the building. Wallace said they had set some target dates for construction and are pretty close to when they had originally hoped to open. He said in the last few days leading up to the opening, it's pretty hectic, but we're trying to get everything moved by then and we're on target, so we should be good. The store will have about 16 to 18 employees, whereas the other location had 10 to 12, he said. Wallace said the store is similar to other home improvement box stores, but we're more customer-oriented, in my opinion, just trying to help the customer from the minute they walk through the door to loading lumber. That's our main focus, is to take care of them. Customers come to Kirchner for all kinds of building products, from nuts and bolts to doors, windows, roofing materials, lumber, and flooring. We plan on having it all, Wallace said. The store has a storefront, display area, and lumber yard, which includes a building across the street for special order products and two main lumber yard buildings. Wallace said he's proud of the new site. Being able to serve the community, a brand new building facility, I think it's nice. It looks good where it's at on the main road here, and people will be able to see us and hopefully we'll draw some attention. And I think it will be good for everybody, Wallace said. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. also said he's excited for Kirchner's opening. This has been in the works a long time, he said, thinking back to the years before the redevelopment agreement was finalized. He said Kirchner was trying to decide whether to stay in Danville when the city approached the owners about the West Williams Street realignment and repair project. Williams said Kirchner was doing good business, but it was a little bit out of sight, out of mind, with its location blocks off Gilbert Street. This new location is at the third busiest intersection in Vermilion County, he added. Williams said the business should keep more dollars local, as it sees more customers from South Danville and the southern and western parts of this area who might drive to Champaign or elsewhere now instead of driving all the way to North Danville for building supplies. I'm happy for that visibility, Williams added. He's grateful Kirchner expanded with additional employees, making it one of their largest stores, and a building that was needing a little bit of love was reused. Also, some dilapidated houses were torn down. Williams added that the driving public could finally see the start of the West Williams Street jog becoming a curved roadway next construction season. Moving on to page A9, the Our Communities section. Ford County Courts, September trial set for accused fentanyl dealer arrested on I-57 by Will Broomlevy of the Ford County Chronicle. Dateline Paxton, a September jury trial is set for a Chicago man charged in Ford County with possession of 400 to 900 grams of fentanyl with intent to deliver, aggravated battery to a peace officer, and aggravated driving on a revoked driver's license. Rashawn A. Carter, 50, of Chicago, was charged with the three felonies in Ford County Circuit Court following his arrest by Illinois State Police in a June 24th traffic stop at the intersection at the Interstate 57 interchange in Paxton. Carter has since remained in custody at the Ford County Jail in Paxton on a pretrial detainment order. Shackled and wearing an orange jumpsuit, Carter appeared in court for a preliminary hearing Wednesday with public defender Harvey Welch of Urbana. After hearing brief testimony from arresting state trooper Nick Rutherford and arguments from state's attorney Andrew Killian, Judge Matt Fitton ruled that the prosecution had established probable cause to proceed to trial based on a preponderance of the evidence. The only evidence presented through Rutherford's testimony was related to just one of the three charges, though, as there was no mention of the large quantity of fentanyl allegedly found in Carter's possession, or that Carter allegedly shoved Rutherford as he was being arrested, according to charging documents. As Fitton noted in his ruling, the prosecution at this preliminary proceeding needed to establish probable cause for only one of the three charges. In this case, aggravated driving on a revoked driver's license, to establish probable cause for all three. Rutherford, a Ford County native and state trooper for more than 6 years, testified that he initiated a traffic stop on a Chevrolet Malibu driven by Carter at 8:51 p.m. June 24th after observing two traffic offenses, following too closely and improper lane usage. Carter's southbound car exited the interstate at milepost 261 in Paxton, Rutherford said, and turned from the southbound off-ramp onto Ottawa Road heading east before finally stopping on the I-57 overpass. During the traffic stop, Rutherford said, he determined that Carter, the car's only occupant, had a revoked Illinois driver's license. Carter's license had been revoked since 2004 after he was convicted of driving under the influence in Sangamon County, Rutherford said. Since then, Carter has been convicted at least three times of driving with a suspended or revoked driver's license, Rutherford said. As requested by Killian, Fitton set a jury trial for September 8th. Killian told Fitton, though, that he does not know if he will have results from the state police crime lab back before that date. If convicted of the charges, Carter would face a mandatory prison sentence ranging from 12 to 50 years for manufacture and delivery of 400 to 900 grams of fentanyl, a Class X felony. The other two charges, aggravated battery to a police officer, a Class 2 felony, and aggravated driving on a revoked driver's license, a Class 4 felony, are punishable by sentences ranging from probation to up to 7 and 3 years in prison, respectively. Citing an ongoing investigation, state police declined this month to release any information to the Ford County Chronicle about Carter's case. Next article. Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System, work underway for record modernization, by Jennifer Bailey of the News Gazette. Dateline Danville. Construction is underway around the campus of Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System as part of the implementation of the Federal Electronic Health Record System. It involves a little bit more sophisticated IT networks and systems, said Stacy Williams, executive director of the Danville facility. And because some of that involves digging and the like underneath the roads, we've had to do some road work as well to adjust. U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Deputy Secretary Paul Lawrence visited the Danville VA last week to meet with leadership and staff about updates on the effort to modernize the system, which is expected to go live on March 20th, 2027. He said implementation started during President Donald Trump's first term in 2018 and was restarted earlier this year with rollouts in Michigan and Ohio and next month, Indiana. The electronic health record is a digital image of all the things that happened to a service member while they're in service through their time with us at the VA, Lawrence said. Veterans won't have to repeat whether they were injured in service or other information to providers, who will be able to check one location for records and make sure tests and services aren't reported at multiple locations, he added. The system is expected to be fully implemented at all VA facilities by the end of 2030. So far, the results have been very positive in terms of the feedback from our veterans and feedback from our doctors and nurses, Lawrence said. Lawrence said local VA employees' work will change and they will have standardized steps for patient safety. Additional layoffs are not expected, as the VA has been right-sizing our workforce and has eliminated administrative positions, he said. He said the total cost of implementing the new system is about $37 billion. And now we move on to sports on page B1. With Champaign Central Baseball, big things are ahead. Spotlight on Jake Monroe, former Maroons standout, continues rise with promotion to Rocket City, by Matt Lucas of thenewsgazette.com. Dateline Madison, Alabama. Jake Monroe didn't just spend his recent week away from baseball relaxing. Sure, he did some of that during the All-Star break for all levels of pro baseball, but the 22-year-old Champaign Central graduate had other items on his mind, like proposing to his girlfriend, fellow Central graduate Gia Macedo, when he was back home in Champaign last week. We went to the Japanese garden on campus near the pond, and I invited some friends, told them to tell her it's a picnic, Monroe said earlier this week on the News Gazette Sports Page radio show on WDWS 1400 AM and 93.9 FM. She was arriving thinking her friends were going to have a picnic. She had no idea I was in Champaign. As she's walking up, she saw me standing there. It was a really special moment. Special moments have happened in bunches for Monroe the last 12 months. Monroe became the 10th Central graduate to be drafted by a Major League Baseball team when the Los Angeles Angels selected him in the fourth round of the 2025 draft after his one productive season in Louisville. A 2022 Central graduate, Monroe had a successful two seasons at John A. Logan College in 2023 and 2024 before transferring to Louisville.